Everybody get up, it's time to slam now. We got the real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam.
Comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it! They win it! Kemba Walker. Step back.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Full Court Press alongside Nick Merrick. I'm Josh Franz. We hope you had a great holiday break and we welcome you back now to our sixth episode. On today's agenda, we'll talk about the new rise of the Brooklyn Nets and break down some Pac-12 NCAA basketball for you. But before we get that going, we're going to do something now that we're going to do every single week until Rudy Gay is no longer a member of the Memphis Grizzlies, and that is the Rudy Gay Watch. Nick, where is he going?
We'll make this short and sweet as plenty of rumors still circulating. So while they're coming in, I think he's going to take his talent to the Washington, D.C. area and join the Washington Wizards. Reason, they have a lot of young talent. I'm not sure Bradley Beal or John Wall are leaving anytime soon. I think they're going to want one of those two players in the deal. Don't think it's going to happen. So I think you're going to have to settle for some a little bit less talented top first-round picks, and then maybe throw in a guy like Jamal Crawford to help them out in the shooting guard position over in Memphis.
Well, I like how you said he's going to the Washington, D.C. area, like LeBron went to South Beach. Can we just say the team that he's going to? You think that Rudy Gay is going to be a member of the Washington Wizards, right?
Yeah, he's going closer to home. I mean, he's born in Baltimore. He's from Baltimore. We both looked this up. He went to school in UConn. UConn's fairly close to D.C., so maybe a little ties there.
Well, Mecca Okafor is in Washington, right? And he plays for the Wizards, and he's went to UConn, obviously a star there. So he'd join some common ground there. But I don't have him going to Washington. I think he'll go to the Sacramento, or really not soon to be Sacramento, Kings. They're going to want a big splash wherever they end up moving. Thinking right now it's going to be in Seattle. What's a better way than moving to a new area than to bring a young superstar like Rudy Gay along with them? They're also not high on DeMarcus Cousins, who really does have value to other teams in the league because he's a young power forward. He's big, he's strong, he grabs rebounds, he's a tough guy. He can find a spot on an NBA roster, but he's just not for the Kings. So if you match up Aaron Brooks and Tyreek Evans with Rudy Gay, that's a great 1-2-3 combination for 10 years as long as they find some big guys to go along with it. They're big on Jason Thompson. They like him. He's a 6'11 forward. They're also big on Thomas Robinson, the freshman big guy out of Kansas. So they have guys that can replace DeMarcus Cousins, and the value that they get back from Rudy Gay is really priceless for their roster.
Well, on top of that, Memphis is obviously looking to get rid of clear some of that cap space as well, as based upon the NBA collective bargaining agreement, if they go over the luxury tax, the team has to pay the league dollar for dollar what they go over. Currently, right now, the Memphis Grizzlies are about $4 million over that cap. So Rudy Gay's contract playing a little bit of a role in that, but it's more just because he wasn't really fitting in with the team anymore. And they just figured time's about right where we might as well see what value we can get for him while we still can. Makes sense. But Josh and I are probably going to be having fun with this one for a couple of weeks, assuming he stays on the market. He might even stay there through until the summer. But just some places he's been said to possibly be shopping around, Memphis has been, is Phoenix, Toronto, Golden State, Denver, Minnesota, and Sacramento. So those are the top ones. And then the Wizards also have sent out a trade offer. Apparently it was a good trade offer. Hasn't really been disclosed. So that's about six or seven teams there.
Right. As I said, this guy's a young superstar. There's a bunch of teams in the league that would be lucky to have him. I just think that you don't want to see, if you're Memphis, you don't want to see him walk away like LeBron did. You'd rather get some value for him like the Nuggets did with Carmelo Anthony. They brought talent back. And they've, aside from their slow start this year, when they traded Melo last year, they were a great team down the stretch, finished stronger without him than they did with him. And that can be an example for how Memphis moves on without Rudy Gay. They have some pieces there already. Mike Conley Jr. is a good young point guard. He played with Greg Oden at Ohio State. They have Zach Randolph, who really the offense is run around. He's the main focus, and he needs the ball in his hand a lot, just like Rudy Gay does, and there's just not enough balls to go around there, and that's part of the reason why they want to move Gay. It's a similar situation to what's going on with the Lakers right now. There's just not enough minutes in the game, not enough balls on the court. And then obviously big man Marc Gasol is in Memphis. He's a guy who they can run the offense through, great passing big man, good back-to-the-basket guy. So I think it matches up well to keep those two big guys and then have them both teach DeMarcus Cousins, mentor to him. If he comes off the bench learning from those two, he's going to develop into quite a player.
All right, well, I guess we'll see where Rudy Gay will end up in the next couple weeks. But you know who does not need Rudy Gay right now is the Brooklyn Nets. So let's switch gears to New York. So just a little bit down the road, I guess, from my possible destination in D.C. In December, the Brooklyn Nets started off on a five-game losing streak. They lost 11 total games in December and now have a chance to possibly go 9-1 in their last 10 games.
Well, at the moment, they're under a minute, up 10 points over Toronto at home for finishing 9 wins in their last 10 games.
We'll call that a win right now.
So we'll give it to them. Give credit to PJ Carlissimo those last 10 games. He's won 9 of them. He's won all of their wins, 9 of the last 10. He's been phenomenal. I wasn't a huge fan of the Avery Johnson fire. I think he's a great young coach. He proved that in Dallas. He just didn't have time to prove it in Brooklyn. I think he'll get another job down the line and be successful. But you got to give credit to PJ Carlissimo for turning this around. Darren Williams hasn't complained since. They've had banged up guys with Chris Humphries and Brooke Lopez, but it hasn't slowed him down. Now with this win here tonight, they're 2 games back of the Miami Heat for the best record in the Eastern Conference.
Well, it's a very good stance, too. I guess the one thing going on, if you're a Nets hater, the one stat you could obviously look at is the strength of schedule in the past 10 games hasn't been very phenomenal. As it started off against the Charlotte Bobcats and the Cleveland Cavaliers, yuck. Then, obviously, their one loss came against San Antonio Spurs, and they got smoked, as that one was on New Year's Eve Day. And then to open up January, that's where they have not lost yet. In the month of January.
So they haven't lost in 2013, is what you're telling me.
They have not lost in 2013, but they did have a good win to start against with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Then all the rest were kind of about average possible playoff teams, though, still. I mean, the Phoenix Suns could sneak their way in. Indiana Pacers, same thing. Maybe if Sacramento can get their game back or get a Rudy Gay, like you may think they will, or Philadelphia could spark some life as well. So, it's not horrible teams. I guess recently, but they started off on a kind of a let's get our feet back together going into 2013, and Charlotte and Cleveland are probably the best two ways of doing so.
Right, well, there's no shame in ever losing to the San Antonio Spurs. So that's not something bad that goes against them. And what do we say that all good teams have to do in the league? We say that all good teams in the league have to beat the teams they're supposed to beat and win against easy teams, easy opponents, and win those games. And that's exactly what Brooklyn's done. So, yeah, you look at the schedule, and it hasn't been against the best opponents, but give them credit for not falling asleep, paying attention, being focused with their new coach, and going out and winning those games.
Well, here's a big stat, too, on top of it. You're going to look for some of the quieter heroes to step up. Reggie Evans has kind of done that for me at least this month, as he started off the first 3 games of the 2013 schedule with 12 rebounds, 23 rebounds, and then 15 rebounds. So the point total obviously is not going to be there for Reggie Evans. But for a 6'8" forward, this guy knows how to box out. He's 32 years old, 10 years in the league. More of a role player, so to speak, on this Brooklyn Nets team, who's obviously very much run by Darren Williams. You know, it's not going to matter. If you get the full team together, you get the team on board for the system, that's what the new head coach is doing right now, that's where good things happen, and that's why the winning streak they're currently in is still going to go on at least for one more game.
Right, and what I'm going to say right now about Reggie Evans, he's obviously brought in there for rebounding, but I think that's where his game really improved when he played with the Clippers. He went against Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan every day in practice, and if you don't box those guys out and be physical, they're going to jump right over you every day. That prepared him to become a better rebounder, was a great role player the past couple years for the Clippers, moved on now to the Nets, and he's a foundation off the bench for their big guys. Now, we thank Ryan Bafalukos for that topic. We'll come back to another one he sent us in the show. Remember, every week you can send us your topics. Just tweet us at Cronkite Sports. Let us know what you want us to talk about, and we'll bring up those topics. But let's move on now to a segment we have on every week, our Ballers and Fallers. I have one baller, one faller from the NBA this season. The past 2 weeks, I'm going to have to give it up to Tristan Thompson of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Anderson Varejao went down with a knee injury. He'll be out 6 to 8 weeks. Looks like another 5 to 6 weeks at this point. But there has been no slippage in play in that center position in Cleveland. The past 2 weeks, he's averaged 14 points, 11.8 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal a game, a half a block a game. He has been the cornerstone for the big guys in Cleveland, giving Kyrie Irving some help there to win some ball games in Cleveland.
Obviously, it's no Varejao, but if you're going to look for one of the younger guys to step up, he's certainly one of the better ones. And just checking out between both of our computers, we're looking at some fantasy NBA basketball as well. So I see Yahoo has him ranked inside the top 70 as his starting rank was in the 300s. So pretty shabby, not too shabby to come from in the 300s, all of a sudden a top 100 threat for teams wanting to pick him up. So if you have a waiver wire and your entire league's about 2 weeks late, go take a look at Tristan Thompson.
Yeah, if Tristan Thompson's available, if Emeka Okafor is available, if either of those guys are available, go out and win your league right now because nobody else knows what they're doing. But we'll go to the flip side of it right now, and I'll give you my one faller for the week. Here's a guy who started in Yahoo rankings as projected to be the 98th best player in Yahoo. Right now, he's at 228. I'm talking about guard for the Boston Celtics, Jason Terry. He was supposed to come in and replace Ray Allen, be a spark off the bench, do what he did for the Mavs 2 years ago, help lead them to a championship, and be a cornerstone for offense. Now, over the past 2 weeks, he's averaged 5 points, 2.5 rebounds, and 3 assists a game. That's not what they're looking to get out of him. He needs to be a bigger part on the offensive end if the Celtics team wants to have any success going forward in the playoffs.
Wah. Wow. Throw a little thing in there. And on top of that, it's not like he's not getting playing time, too, and he has the team around him, or at least an aging team. We hope they're still on the court. I don't know. I feel like I'm going to turn on the TV and just see Kevin Garnett in a fetal position because he just passed out and just overworkage in basketball. But, no, I mean, obviously, Terry's a big reason why Boston could have possibly been successful this season. They're still in the hunt like they always will be until that core officially all breaks apart. But I agree, not too good of numbers there. So let's switch gears over to NCAA, where I'll give my ballers and fallers. So what do you want to hear first, the baller or the faller?
Good news, bad news. I'll take bad news first and take good news later. Be happy in the end.
All right, let's go with the bad news. I'm actually going to go look over at Cincinnati as they just dropped outside the top 25 for the first time in quite some weeks. They had 2 losses, one of which was the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, but before that was to now a 10-7 St. John's team. They're 1-1 in the Big East. Obviously, that victory came over Cincinnati. But if you're looking for leadership at this point, when you get into conference play, you're going to look to your stars. Their star is Sean Kilpatrick, the guard. He averages over 35 minutes a game, 18 points. What did he do in the loss to St. John's? 7 points, 5 rebounds. More turnovers than assist. What are you doing? You can't do that.
Especially against a St. John's opponent. I said it with Brooklyn. Good teams beat the teams that they're supposed to beat. St. John's is a team that every team who wants to be in the top 25 is supposed to beat. Cincinnati couldn't do it. You look at your star player. He didn't have a good game. You got to step it up and beat these teams that you're supposed to take care of during the regular season.
Well, that's the whole point of coming out, especially in college basketball. I mean, 3-for-14 shooting as well. At least he got a little bit of redemption. He was the only player on the Bearcats to have double-digit scoring the next game, although they did still lose to the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. He dropped 15 points, but still, leadership, that's where it's going to take, especially when you're a top 20 threat. You got to compete every single day. So now, switching gears, let's hear some more happy news. Well, unfortunately, it might be a lose-lose for you, Josh, as I'm going with my baller combo of this episode. It's going to go to NC State players Lorenzo Brown and Richard Howell. The reason why you might not be happy, for fans to know, obviously being a Duke fan, Josh, NC State finally unlocked the top team, the first team to do so, and then right after that, Michigan lost. There's no more unbeaten teams in NCAA Division I. The reason I picked these two against Duke, Howell had 16 points, 18 rebounds, and then for Lorenzo Brown, he had 12 points, 13 assists. So he was passing it while Howell continued showing why he's one of the top five most efficient point scorers in the NCAA. As a whole team, the Wolfpack are the top team in the nation in terms of field goal percentage. So Duke's still a phenomenal team. Obviously, Ryan Kelly's out. Huge loss for them. They lost Curry when they were up by about, or excuse me, Wolfpack were up by about six with 3:30 to play or so. That's when Curry went out with his injury before scoring, or after scoring 22 points. But still, phenomenal performance from the team from Raleigh. Rivals of both of our
Next time you tell me if I want good news or bad news, I'm just going to say it doesn't matter because you're going to give me bad news either way. You're sitting here laughing wearing your University of North Carolina shirt because my team, Duke, decided to lay an egg against NC State. Yes, Ryan Kelly was hurt, so that's a big reason. He's an integral part, a senior leader of this team. He's one of the Fab Four of that Duke roster, if you will. If he's not healthy, this team isn't going anywhere. So I don't want to look too much into that Duke loss, but give your guys credit. They stepped up, and I know why those are your ballers of the week.
Well, just to give you some credit, yeah, I'm wearing my UNC shirt, but still, if they would have lost to Florida State on the road and they would have dropped to 0-3, that would have been the first time in over a decade that UNC would have started conference play 0-3. So not looking very good on my side either, so I'm just trying to...
Yeah, Roy Williams has to go. He's ridiculous.
I don't think he has to go. I wouldn't say he has to go.
He'll leave on his own terms.
He will. Yeah, he won the fan base over playing. Plus, with the recruits he continually brings in, he'll still be fine. Do I agree with his coaching style? Yeah, maybe
enough
not.
Of it.
But is he one of the best recruiters? Absolutely. He's going to be a top three recruiter, I still believe, in NCAA D1. Probably number two behind Calipari. You could even argue number one. I don't think I'd go that far quite yet. But, yeah, he's not going to go anywhere.
No, he's one step below Calipari. Calipari doesn't rebuild. He reloads. And that's the one difference about North Carolina and most other schools in the nation. They'll have an off year every 5 or 6 years. And this is it. They had it a few years ago after a national title. It's going to take time for these young players to develop. And you're not going to have a great recruiting class every single year. It's gonna take a year off and then back to elite play for North Carolina.
Well, it's ironic that you say, Calipari doesn't rebuild, he reloads. And as we're saying this, all the articles circulating about how University of Kentucky and UNC, the two blue schools, the bad blue brothers, may not even make NCAA basketball if they continue their poor play. But I guess we'll have to see in the later episodes how things shape up. And Josh and I have more content on that. So,
well, can we give Kentucky some time to develop? These are... What do they start? 4 18-year-old kids playing against 22-year-old men in college basketball?
Not going to give them time.
Wait.
I don't know what you mean by that, but I'm not going to give any time. They are not going to do well this season. I'm sticking to it. If they make the NCAA, good for them. I'm not even having them going out of the first round.
They can't win a game in the tournament this year.
I don't think they can.
Wow, that is a bold statement. Write it down, folks, and then tell Nick Merrick when he's wrong in March. But you want to move on to the next topic.
Assuming they make it. It could be the NIT bound for Kentucky and UNC.
It could be, but I can't see a tournament without both of those teams in it. But now let's talk about some Pac-12 basketball. I got another question from Ryan Bafalukos. What is the best team in the Pac-12? And we're going to combine that with a question we got from Tyler Bell. How many teams out of the Pac-12 will make it into the NCAA tournament this year, Nick?
All right, I'll address Ryan's comment first. I think as of right now, I have to say the best team is the Oregon Ducks. Technically, they're slightly behind UCLA in the standings just because they're 3-0 and UCLA is 4-0 in the Pac-12. But the reason I say that is because the Oregon Ducks, A, they upset the top five team. I think they were number four at the time in U of A Wildcats. And they have five players all in double-digit points. They're a very, very well-distributed basketball team. I still think E.J. Singler is the biggest threat on their team, yet he's still the fourth best point scorer, so he's not at the top. Obviously, the spread is so close, where they give plenty of guys minutes. They all play each time. I guess the one negative from that is if you're really looking in the close game, a two-point game with a minute 30 left, who are you going to give the ball to? Who's proven? I guess the good news is you're going to play the hot hand. If somebody has 15 points in that game, you're going to be running that play, the final couple of plays through that person. But it could be a weakness down the road, as obviously some more different Pac-12 schools have their threats. Obviously UCLA, you almost always know they're going to try to go inside at the end, unless it's they're down by six. Same thing with Arizona; they have plenty of threats. So I'm going to say the Ducks are the top team. Who are you saying is number one?
Well, you mentioned the three teams that I would look at it and have a tiebreaker between. That's UCLA, Oregon, and Arizona. Oregon has the best win, and it's over Arizona, so I'm going to take out Arizona altogether. UCLA, to me, doesn't have an impressive win. They're 4-0 in conference, 14-3 overall. That's great so far. I'm going to give it to Oregon, though. Like, I'm going to agree with you, and it's not something I like to normally do, but once in a while, we can both be right about something. They're 14-2, 3-0 in conference, the best win in conference of anybody, proving that Arizona is beatable. Like you said, no more undefeated teams in the NCAA. Right now, the Oregon Ducks are the best team in the Pac-12. Now, how many teams make the NCAA tournament?
I have a feeling we might be pretty darn close in our agreements here. I think there are going to be four teams actually coming out of the Pac-12, which is probably a lot more than I've ever expected in previous years, because Pac-12, sorry, it's not much of a basketball conference.
Yeah, last year it was absolutely atrocious.
Still agreeing with that. I can't believe, yeah, but the way they were able to come from an absolutely ungodly season, all of a sudden, like, okay, you could have some potential dark horses here. I mean, obviously, UCLA was ranked very high to start. Now they're ranked in the top 25 again, as is Oregon. So if you're looking there alone, there's your two teams. Obviously, Arizona. U of A Wild. I was going to them next. U of A Wildcats are still a top 10 opponent despite losing to Oregon. They only fell to 7 in the polls this week, so they're still locked. So that's three teams in the top 25. Don't think the Pac-12 has seen that in quite some time. And then I think Washington's going to have enough to get themselves in. Obviously, they're going to be playing a little bit off the streak they had last season, unfortunate, in the Pac-12 tourney when it was the Colorado, the Buffaloes who came out on top and getting the automatic bid. So I'm going to say four, but I think there's going to be an outside chance of a fifth team, and that's if and only if our ASU Sun Devils can make a push in the Pac-12. They have to make a good run in the Pac-12 tournament. You know, we were talking to some of our friends earlier today. I mean, one of them, Kerry Crowley, mentioned he can't have more than probably about 8 losses, especially with the weak schedule they've had. Right now, they only have 3, so it is doable. I can see Arizona State as a dark horse. I'm going to say 4 with a possibility of 5.
Right, I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to say anywhere between 3 and 5. We have UCLA, Oregon, and Arizona, to me, already have done enough to lock up their spots in the Pac-12 unless they completely fall off. I'm not expecting that. I don't think you're expecting that. The Pac-12 isn't good enough to really have them fall off going into the end of the season. So that's 3 teams automatically. I look at Washington, and I think they're more than talented enough to make the NCAA tournament. And as I said, the bottom half of the Pac-12 is something they can just eat up, get some wins, and extend their record, their positive win streak there. So that's 4. And then the fifth team, it's all up to Arizona State, like you said. We go here. We go to the games. We see what their potential is. But then we watch games, we're like, what are these guys doing? They should be playing in high school. So it depends. It goes back and forth. Arizona State is talented enough. We just have to see if they're well-coached and disciplined enough to win on a consistent basis and beat the teams that they're supposed to beat on the road. That'll be the toughest thing for this team, is winning games on the road.
Well, the Sun Devil schedule has been absolutely terrible non-conference. That was for a reason, because nobody knew how well this team was going to get together. They just lost 4 players. 2 were kicked off the team, 1 transferred and went to Iowa State for football. The other one's actually at number 25 Marquette right now, Trent Lockett, the best Sun Devil last season. He's doing very well at Marquette, so good for him. The one thing that concerns me about Washington is they aren't a very flashy team. All of their major statistical categories are all worse than 110th in the NCAA, so not very good stat lines across there, which could come to hurt them, especially seeing the second half schedule with Oregon. They have to play Oregon twice, Arizona twice, UCLA twice, and ASU twice. So those are the 4 teams we said that could possibly knock off Washington out of contention. And they had a bunch of their losses early. That's probably more a good thing. They actually started the season 2-3, but then since then they've rebounded. Now they're 11-5. They're perfect 3-0 in conference play. We'll see what that happens there, but going back really fast with, you know, we had our top, who's the top team in the Pac-12. This Saturday, UCLA hosts Oregon. That could be a very good game to watch.
That'll be a difference maker. We'll be able to tell who's really on top of the conference there. And then, as we know, the University of Arizona comes to Tempe to play ASU. It's really a game for ASU to be able to make a statement and say, hey, we belong in the conversation as the best team in the Pac-12. Or the other way around and say Arizona says, That Oregon loss was a fluke. We should still be undefeated. We could take care of anybody, anytime in their house. So we'll see how those two games happen, and obviously we'll reflect on that next week and see how the leaderboard looks for the Pac-12.
Well, Arizona's a very good team. I think you know, when you said the biggest win may have come from Oregon beating Arizona, just to kind of feed off mine, I think mine was actually an Arizona victory in non-conference when they beat Florida. The reason because is they never led in that game until the final 5 seconds when they eventually hit the game-winning shot. So they stuck neck and neck with Florida, who now Florida is just 3 spots below them in the standings, a fantastic team, an SEC school, very poised in basketball. So just to get a big win like that in your resume is going to kind of help U of A towards the Pac-12 and being able to play there. That's why I think everybody was so surprised that they would lose to a team like Oregon this early. I think Oregon's very good. It wasn't a fluke by any means. I think it was more of a wake-up call for U of A, who had a big target on their back. But Arizona State's going to be able to compete with them. I don't know what people are saying exactly in the polls. Don't really care. Don't know what the Vegas line is. Doesn't matter. When you know that two teams are both playing well, they both have a chance to make a better push for themselves in the standing, that's all that's going to matter. Then it comes down to heart and how well the team can perform under pressure.
Absolutely. It should be a great weekend of basketball. I look forward to all the Pac-12 and NBA action. But unless there's anything else for you to add, Nick, that'll do it for another episode of Full Court Press. Remember, give us our feedback, topic ideas, anything you want to say at Cronkite Sports, #FullCourtPress. Until next week, have a good week.